Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour, Jake and Stacy, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Jake, are you ready to have one of my favorite sports debates of all time?
Oh, let's
my
go.
My favorite sports debates of all time. I know some people love the MJ versus Jordan. Some people like more abstract, like should you be allowed to have performance-enhancing drugs in sports, right? That one's a little darker, but like that's a fun debate too. One of my all-time favorite debates, can you win a Super Bowl without a franchise quarterback? Now, I did have a listener fairly question me and say, well, did you say elite or did you mean franchise? Do you mean good? What do you mean? I mean that I would say, for instance, that Russell Wilson, while his numbers in his second season weren't the best of his career, was clearly, in hindsight, a franchise quarterback, that he was a rare talent, and I would count that as winning a Super Bowl with a franchise quarterback, that franchise quarterback still being on a rookie deal.
Yeah.
So that's how I would just so we all know the definitions we're using. That's how I would classify that.
So in your mind, and I think this is an important question, is Matt Hasselbeck a franchise quarterback in your mind, given the context? Okay.
Given the context. So, okay. So your franchise guy. Now, I would say Matt Hasselbeck.
Because I would certainly label Matt Hasselbeck at the time of his tenure in Seattle, he was a franchise quarterback.
Your offense was phenomenal.
A fringe Pro Bowl level quarterback that the entire franchise was committed and dedicated to having him be their quarterback for not just a couple years, but for the foreseeable future.
Right. So it's not necessarily that your quarterback is putting up the best numbers, leading the league in every category. Is he clearly one of the best quarterbacks? Is he clearly a top quarterback? Is he clearly a rare talent? Russell Wilson broke the franchise record for touchdown passes, and I want to say 17 or 18, and then broke it the subsequent year. But in his rookie season, he broke or tied Peyton Manning's record for touchdown passes, and then the following season continued to improve there. While they weren't career highs, he was clearly a rare talent. Clearly, the Seahawks got a bargain. You had a franchise player on a rookie deal. That's kind of like the key. So the question being, can you win a Super Bowl without that guy? And if so, how do you do it? I already love so many of these responses, but Jake, I'm going to throw it to you first.
I think that when we get into this conversation, the names of Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson.
It's the Don't Say Trent Dilfer Challenge.
And Nick Foles, right? There are certain quarterbacks that people throw out there and be like, oh, well, they did it with this guy. Yeah, but how many times has that been able to be replicated? We're also talking about historical elite level defenses, okay? I mean seriously, we're talking about historical defenses. These are not the norm. They're not the norm for how teams get to a Super Bowl. Are there teams that are very run heavy or defensive minded that are able to get to Super Bowls? Yes, but they have functioning franchise quarterbacks that are helping them get there. I would even label Jared Goff as a functioning franchise quarterback that was able to get the LA Rams to the Super Bowl, help get them to the Super Bowl in 2020. Like, you look at his stats, you can't argue with the stats that he was providing for the team and the play that he was giving to the team. So my answer is, without a doubt, Stacy, you have to have a franchise quarterback to give you the best chance, not the only chance, the very best chance to get to a Super Bowl.
First of all, someone said, are we just going to brush by Stacy saying MJ versus Jordan? What a Jake-ism. My bad. You guys knew I meant LeBron versus Jordan, but that was funny. Yes, I did mention that. Secondly, I like the way that this texter explains it from the 360. It's unlikely, but possible with the right formula. It's such a simple answer. But in my mind, it's exactly how I feel about it. It's unlikely, but it's possible with the right formula. They mentioned Nick Foles winning it. You had Rex Grossman with an appearance, obviously Trent Dilfer. And just like you mentioned, you were like, look, there are exceptions to the rule. And the one theme among those teams is that they had an elite unit, whether that was the defense, whether it was basically everyone around them except for the quarterback, that you had you had a reservoir of talent that you almost didn't need to make up for the fact that you didn't have an elite quarterback. Much less just like a really good franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, look at Matt Hasselbeck at age 30 in 2005 when they got to the Super Bowl. They're 13-3, and Matt Hasselbeck's numbers are solid, but they're not anything that blow you away. I mean, 65.5 completion percentage, just a little bit under 3,500 yards, 24 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Those are good numbers. In the context of knowing that you had a very good defense and you had the best running game in all of football, right? A very dominant running game, a Sean Alexander MVP season to go along with that stretch and with that run. So it is, I think, as that texter put it, it's all in the context of how this team is formulated and put together. But you are going to need to be able to rely on that quarterback at any given point during the season to be able to come up big for you, to be able to come up with a 2-minute drive and win the game or put you in position for the field goal. You're going to have to rely on that quarterback at some point in the playoffs to be able to play and elevate his game to put you in position to win. I just, that position is too important to say, it doesn't matter. It's okay. You can have a subpar quarterback and win. That puts so much pressure
on everyone else.
Yes, it puts so much pressure. Think about it first. The Seattle Seahawks right now, it puts so much pressure on the defense and the running game to be great right out of the gate, to be able to support and supplement what you have at the quarterback position right now entering the 2022 season with Drew Lock and Geno Smith. Everyone else has to elevate their game and be that team over the course of a 17-game season to give themselves the best chance to win. That's a hard thing to do, and you have to have generational players to be able to sustain that for over the course of a season and to get yourself through the playoffs.
While you're thinking about the importance of that franchise quarterback, I want you to listen to this sound from Ken Carmen, which I think adds another important angle here.
I could talk to you guys for the rest of your show.
Would love it.
You know, we see it all over the league.
Welcome to Ken, Jake, and Stacey, guys.
I mean, you guys see it. Well, we're in the division with Joe Burrow and Cincinnati. Cincinnati is not that great. Cincinnati's all right. I mean, they got some good young players. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Jamar Chase is great. Let's be serious. But they're still a few years away. Joe Burrow takes them to the next level because he's that good and he's that much of a leader. And I think that he really put a spotlight on Baker Mayfield. And when you don't have that guy, it just puts a spotlight on everything that's wrong with your team.
I think that's exactly it, is that a franchise guy does just enough to almost like speed up the development of your team.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow was not the very best quarterback in football last year. And for that matter, Joe Burrow's team did not win a Super Bowl, just for the record. However, Joe Burrow was clearly a special talent. Joe Burrow also had a phenomenal wide receiver with whom he had an amazing connection. And they kind of took the league by storm, and they had a wonderful season and got to a Super Bowl as a result of it. Cincinnati, as you heard Zach just say, is still kind of behind in terms of trying to bounce back and be really competitive in the AFC. Getting that guy, it lets you speed up three steps. You know what I mean? That,
yeah.
I think that's how
absolutely
I look at it. And I'm seeing so many good questions about, like, hey, what's the quantifiable difference between a franchise guy and not? Like, how will we know if the Seahawks have their franchise guy? What do they need if they don't have that guy? These are all really important questions. And quite honestly, all of the answers are going to be completely subjective, guys, because guess what? None of this is real. All of this is stuff that is opinion-based. It's why we all love it so much and fight with our friends all the time. But the way I look at it is that the franchise guy, God, you're going to hate me saying this, it's a know it when you see it kind of thing. You're going to hate me saying that, but you also know it.
But
you know
but
it in
true
your bones that that's
but
the
but
case.
But it's 100%
Joe Burrow,
true.
You know it.
You do know it, and that's why the moment that you saw Russell Wilson in his first preseason game, and in the second, and in the third, and the fourth, you knew it. You saw it, right? You saw before your very eyes that this was a kid that was doing something at that time that was just, wow, this is something special. Wow, this kid keeps delivering. and keeps driving the team down the field. And he was going into the season as the third quarterback in this competition, and then wins it out. You see it, right? There's that it factor about these quarterbacks. And really, for me, as you look at these franchise quarterbacks, what are they able to do? What's the separation factor? Well, part of it is what they do when it matters most. Matt Stafford, for all the flaws that he has, what did he do throughout the playoffs? He came up big in the fourth quarter. He came up big in two-minute drives. And that was a big reason why the Rams were able to have success and be able to get themselves to a Super Bowl. So you could look at the flaws and the high interceptions that he had through the regular season, and it cost them games, and it certainly was a problem at times. But that's where you make that trade for Matthew Stafford. That's where it pays off. And until the Seahawks can be in a position where for 10 years, Pete Carroll felt comfortable playing these close games because he knew he had a quarterback that could go win them. More often than not, that in two-minute situations that Russell Wilson could come up big or bring them in position where they could kick the game-winning field goal or score the game-winning touchdown. When you have that guy again, that is when you know you're going to be in position to be able to really take this thing to the next level. And honestly, the Seattle Seahawks need to have great urgency in this process. Not force the issue, don't get me wrong, but 2023 hopefully will be the moment or the offseason where the Seahawks are able to find that guy. Because the longer it takes for this franchise to find their next quarterback, their next franchise guy, Stacey, the more likely you are to be in quarterback purgatory, right? Like, it's just how it works. The longer you go, the more mistakes you're likely to make, and also the longer it's going to take you to eventually find that guy down the road. And that is not a position you want this franchise to be in. You want this to be, it's not going to be seamless, but you need for this process to, in order for them to take the next step, they have to be able to not only build their roster around the quarterback, but eventually find that guy that can help springboard them as they are in pursuit of winning their division, getting deeper in the playoffs, and winning a Super Bowl.
A great question from Seth in Fresno. So what you mean to ask is, can you make a Super Bowl or win one without any elite positions? Seth, great question. I think you absolutely yes, and you absolutely need elite positions to win a Super Bowl. But one of my favorite things to point to, I think what Seth is saying is, like, does it matter which position is elite, or do you just need to be as elite as possible and that's enough? The one thing I would point to is 2017 Jacksonville, because remember Saxonville, 55 sacks as a defense. That defense was best in the league. They were amazing. They won me so many points on fantasy. It's why I've never forgotten them. But why didn't they get that much further? Well, for starters, Blake Bortles had a 60% completion percentage over the year and would make a ton of mistakes. I mean, 13 interceptions isn't a ton, but he clearly wasn't their guy, right? Like, that's not the guy. Blake Bortles is far from being Mahomes, Brady, Rodgers, so are many other quarterbacks. But what I'm saying is that having an exceptional defense wasn't enough. And the one thing that I think that we collectively as fans are going to continue to do as the Seahawks continue to try to find their quarterback is say, okay, what if any dude is enough and the defense is great? And I would just caution against looking at teams that have taken that route and thinking, like, well, it worked for them, because it hasn't worked for the Titans and Tannehill. It didn't work for Jacksonville and Bortles. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many other teams it hasn't worked for. And while it's phenomenal that it worked for the Eagles and Nick Foles when he was in there for them, or Dilfer and the Ravens back in 2001,
yes,
2000, you needed something so exceptional. And that's, what, two examples over the last 20 years?
Yeah, you can't just be... just being the concept of being offensive led or defensive led is not good enough, right? You need to be elite, right? So if you're giving me the example of Trent Dilfer, or the example of Brad Johnson, or the example of, you know, let's just say the Seattle Seahawks over in 2013, you had historical elite defenses. Historical elite defenses. And in 2013, I'd argue that the offense was pretty darn good with the running game that they had and with Russell Wilson and what they were able to accomplish. But let's just look at the 2000 Ravens. Let's look at the 2007 Buccaneers. These were elite level defenses, historic level defenses. And if you're going to say you don't need an elite level quarterback or just you could win with a subpar quarterback, well, you're putting a ton of pressure on this particular franchise to not just be a good defense, but to be historically elite, and that is difficult. That's once in a generation.
From the 509, how has this offseason of trading for quarterbacks changed future drafts for the Seahawks? You guys are asking so many good questions and having so many fun points. I can't even stand it. It's been a fun conversation. I'm not even getting to everyone's points on the text line, but you guys are all people I would love to continue this conversation with. Speaking of questions, though, I do have to get to four down territory, so let's go.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First Down, NFL.com's Mark Sessler says the Seahawks' top offseason priority needs to be what?
Well, he says that their top priority needs to be getting Baker Mayfield. That, yeah, you can play the game and say that everything's fine with your quarterback situation. You like it just how it is. But as Mark Sessler said, not my words, Mark Sessler said, the Seahawks are acting like they are smarter than everyone else. I thought that that was a very strong statement. I don't think that's how the Seahawks are acting. I believe that they are taking their situation saying this fits for us and what we're trying to accomplish in year one post Russell Wilson, and we're okay and we're comfortable with giving Drew Lock an opportunity. We're okay with seeing what Geno Smith can do for us. I don't think that they're trying to outsmart the room with the quarterback position whatsoever. And if Baker Mayfield becomes available, if he is cut, then I do think the Seahawks are going to be all over this. So I disagree with Mark Sessler that they should be doing everything and anything to be getting Baker Mayfield. I don't want to trade for him. I don't want to be having to pay $18 million for him. I don't believe that's worth it for this organization at this current moment in time. But if he becomes available as a free agent, heck yeah, absolutely, you better go after Baker Mayfield, and it would be a great addition to, you know, what you have at this current moment, and he would give you, from day one, the best chance to win football games.
I'm very much team sign Baker should he become a free agent. Second down. Who was the most underrated move the Seahawks made to the defensive line?
Yeah, so I said overall, who is the underrated acquisition of the entire offseason? That was Justin Coleman. The most underrated defensive line signing or addition that they made was acquiring Shelby Harris in that trade with Russell Wilson. Now, it obviously was overlooked. Shelby Harris is not a Pro Bowl player. He's not somebody that you look at in stats and say, oh my gosh, this guy, look at the numbers that he is able to produce. But this is the guy, for the first time, you have an interior defensive lineman, Stacey, that can genuinely get after the quarterback. And so I think that this is an addition that has been a needed upgrade for this defensive line in quite some time. We've talked about pass rush, we've talked about edge rush, and you love how it's shaping up with Daryl Taylor and Wosu and Boye Mafe, but you need serious help on the interior. You can look at Al Woods and Brian Monet and Puna Ford and the job that they've done in the running game, and that's all great, but you have not had great interior pass rush until since 2017 when Jaron Reed provided you 10.5 sacks. Since that point, you have not had an interior pass rush. And Shelby Harris is a guy that I feel confident in that he is going to be able to apply that pass rush for this group. And if he can match what he did a season ago, 6 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, 11 quarterback hits, that would be a big boost for this defense.
Third down. All right, Jake, 2022 is a very important year to determine the success of what?
It would be important for them to be able to determine the success of the Jamal Adams trade. Mm. Now, why do I say that? Because obviously at this point, you can't look at the original point of the trade. The original point of the trade was that Jamal Adams was going to add to the team in 2020 and 2021 and help this playoff team get to the Super Bowl and better the defense. That did not happen, right? You decided to pay him, you decided to make him the highest paid safety, and now you're in a new transition in terms of what you're trying to accomplish with your team. This team now needs to be defensive led. And Jamal Adams, in a new system outside of Ken Norton, if they can't get Jamal Adams going in a new system that is supposed to be geared towards being more aggressive and putting him in better situations, then I do believe that you can determine whether this is going to be a potential success or this is you can make a determination that this was a failure. Because if the coaching staff can't put him in the right positions or that Jamal Adams can't stay healthy or he can't produce at this level in year three post-trade, I can think I would say that definitively you could say that this was a failure of a trade, and I hope that we're looking at this season in 2022 and not saying that about Jamal Adams, because I firmly believe that this guy has the ability to be one of the most dynamic defensive players in the NFL, just has not been utilized the right way, and so I'm hoping that there is a big difference in the way that he is utilized here in 2022. But a lot on the line here, I think, for this outlook of the trade that was made back in 2020.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, coming up in about 10 minutes, I'm going to tell you about one of the craziest box scores of the baseball season. So for fourth down, I want to know the craziest game you've seen in person.
Craziest game I've seen in person is the one that I actually played in. It was my sophomore year in high school, state championship against O'Day. We were down 35-7 with like 2 or 3 minutes left in the third quarter, and we came back and won 42-35. It was one of the craziest games I've ever been a part of. An emotional roller coaster. So many crazy things that happened in that game. It was one of the best high school football games that I'd ever been a part of. That was nuts. But that was a memory that I will never, ever forget.
No, I mean, I was also like a super good high school athlete. Brady, what about you? What's the craziest game you've seen in person? I guess you're allowed to choose play, too. You were a pitcher, so.
Yes, I will choose one of my select baseball days, summer game. It's crazy in a bad way, I'll say that. To where I'm pitching the game against a really good team. I can't tell you the name of the team and somebody in there, but I pitched a complete game loss.
We lost. A complete game loss.
I'd be like, take me out.
Not even that. It was a complete game loss. I also hit in the lineup as well.
No!
And we scored scored one run, lost 2-1. I had two of our team's three hits with the only RBI on the game. And then after the game, the coach proceeded to say that the reason we lost was my fault.
Brady, I'm sorry to hear that. Definitely not your fault.
Come on, Brady. You should have done more, man.
I'll strike you out right now.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Well, speaking of that box score, I'll tell you exactly what happened next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. I asked you, Jake, and you, Brady, about the craziest game that you'd ever played in or seen in person, and you guys both give good answers. I mean, Jake, yours was an incredible comeback win in high school, and Brady's, yours was an unfortunate complete game loss.
I would also say that I was there for two really awesome Seahawks games. One, the Tony Romo botched snap.
Oh yeah!
In the playoffs, that was unbelievable. The place went absolutely nuts. The other one that is seared into my brain is the 2018 Thursday night Seahawks game against the Rams. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson goes off 4 touchdowns, and they win that game by a missed field goal. By the Rams kicker, who has been lights out, on fire, misses just right. And that was the game that they were honoring Paul Allen and his passing. And that was just such a special moment. And as Steve Rabel would tell you, you know, there was something a little extra that night with maybe Paul Allen had something to do with that missed field goal at the end of the game.
I'm going to tack on one game that, like, I don't think most people would think of, but I was there and personally felt like it was kind of crazy and fun, which was the win over the Texans when it was Watson, Wilson, back and forth, went into overtime. Yeah. I thought that was a phenomenal game. Obviously, a last-second win or an overtime win is always fun. That is even then not as crazy as this game. It's the craziest box score of the baseball season, and it belongs to Iowa with a 30. 16 win over Indiana yesterday. Now, listen, it gets even crazier. It's not just 16. That many runs. Iowa at one point trailed 13-2 after three innings. Then the Hawkeyes center fielder Kyle Huxtorf went off. He went off. He set a Big Ten single game record. Well, what did he do? I'll tell you. He went 6-for-7, which is just a funny number. He went 6-for-7 with three home runs, a three-run homer, and a grand slam, and 12 RBI.
Wow.
Yes.
He told Trevor's story. Here, hold my beer.
That's exactly what it was.
Is insane. That's a game of a lifetime. Unbelievable.
Just the idea of
I would quit after this game.
The idea of going 28-3 from the bottom of the fourth, and that's like runs scored, is wild. Like, you went 28-3 after the fourth inning. It got at one point to 25 runs, and then five more. And then five more runs were added.
R.I.P. to their pitchers.
Exactly, no kidding. Right. I would sincerely, no matter how this kid's career ends, I would forever get that on video, and I would just show that to my kids and my grandkids and say I was the greatest hitter of all time.
They couldn't tell me anything after that. they scored 30 runs, 23 hits, were also walked 12 times, and their leadoff hitter, Michael Seegers, drew 5 of those walks. So, yikes. Congratulations to the Hawkeyes, though. That's a very rare, cool, fun win.
Yes.
Quite the crazy box score. Next story here, college football for this one, a news that will shock absolutely no one. Former Pitt star wide receiver Jordan Addison will transfer to USC.
Yes.
That, in fact, is happening.
That is happening, and we reported that he is going to be making somewhere around, what was it, $3 million? It was reported.
With his Nils deal?
Yeah, NIL deal there that they will potentially be rolling out there for him at USC. And look, I think that this is one of the unfortunate side effects of your combination of transfer portal and the NIL is that basically you have forever free agency, right? The transfer portal is to be a mechanism where, you know, individuals, if they're not in a good position or they're you know, head coach left and left them high and dry, that they could get themselves into a better situation rather than being stuck and having kids is, and I've seen it, having kids' careers forever changed because they went to a school for a particular coach and a particular program and were having success, and somebody else comes in and it changes everything, right? And so I think that was the original intent of the transfer portal, and now it has just become free agency. It has also become free agency and not just, you know, being able to pick and have the freedom to do so, but also the highest bidder, right? You have a talented, very, very talented player like Pitt star Jordan Addison, who is now transferring to not only a more high-profile school, but also is getting a better NIL package. And on one end, you could sit there and say, well, hey, that's the free market. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Jordan Addison for being able to get what he is worth, in this game of college football. And I believe that, and I feel that, but I also feel bad for, you know, the rest of his teammates there at Pitt who are going to be there and are going to miss out on having, you know, Jordan Addison be a part of their team. So it really does go back and forth. It is a double-edged sword, but, you know, I'm excited to see when it's all said and done, Stacey, Jordan Addison at USC and to see what he can do. And USC has added a ton of players via the transfer portal, and they should be a good football team. We'll see how quickly they're able to gel.
Next story here. John Daly, speaking of the PGA Championship and the PGA Tour, I'm not sure how Will Brinson of CBS Sports tracked this, but a final tally of literally everything John Daly put into his body over a full 18 holes. Are you ready?
I am ready. I can't wait to hear this.
21 cigarettes. Smoked 21 cigarettes. Drank 12 Diet Cokes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Had 6 packs of peanut M&Ms, not the best M&M, but respectable choice, 0 ounces of water. And that is what John Daly put into his body over 18 holes during the PGA Tour.
And some would say, and some would argue that he is the definition of peak athletic performance.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, it's crazy that...
the ideal male.
Oh, my gosh. That is absolutely insane. I mean, when you see the evolution of Tiger Woods and what he did and the regiment that he had, then you look at Bryson DeChambeau and how just jacked he is.
And it's like, what are we doing? Look
right.
at this guy.
Yeah, John Daly is, you know, is the average man, right? Going out there, just beer gut and all, being able to still get after it and be able to compete at a high level. That's absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd.
I just miss, like, do you guys ever think back to what you used to consume as maybe a high schooler? Like, when I was in high school, I was on swim team. So we were swimming like 3 hours a day. So, and you're already, you have the metabolism of a teenager. I would, because I had to get up so early, I would get myself out of bed by waking up and having an ice cream sandwich. And for lunch, I would eat like 3 cookies and a bowl of rice.
Just and be able to function like that.
What?
It is amazing. It is amazing.
Yes.
And that's why it's
now
also
funny.
Now I have
a slice of pepperoni pizza and my heart's like, give it a minute.
Yeah. Hey, you might not be eating anything for the rest of the day, right? Like, my gosh. It's like I have to choose now. Before, I could just, you know, I could eat, you know, however much I want. Now I have to choose when my big meal is going to come from. And not just like when I say big meal, not like overly crazy, just like a normal, like normal lunch or normal dinner. I can't do both anymore. Like, what's going on with me? I don't understand this, Stacey. I don't like the moment I hit 30 that my body just
gave up on you.
Welcome to the dark side. On me, but it's just, it's changed.
It's challenging you in fun ways, fun in new ways.
Correct. I'm having to adjust.
You know what? If you're a true competitor, you want a challenge. And that's exactly what turning 30 is. IRG Injury Report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. The Mariners are expected to activate Kyle Lewis from the IL no later than Monday. Meanwhile, Evan White started his rehab assignment with AAA Tacoma. He went 0-for-2, played 6 innings in his first game back on Wednesday night. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Look, I started the day with some not so great news about the Mariners, but I do have something to be excited about. In fact, Jake is especially excited about it. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we're taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners pick up their series against the Red Sox today, Game 2. Robbie Ray gets the start. First pitch is at 4:10 p.m. Pregame show starts at 3 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. Jake, I began our show with some bad news, and I regret that. Look, it wasn't my best day. I just woke up very angry after watching Trevor Story get 3 home runs. I wasn't my best self.
I don't know how anybody can be their best self watching that. I do not blame you.
On top of it, you did not bring donuts in this morning, which you had agreed to do, and so that kind of, threw fuel onto my anger fire.
Hold on. I agreed to do this next Friday. I did not anticipate that the people would come in droves to your support. I did not know how many people wanted me to lose this bet so badly.
That's exactly what it was. It wasn't people doing it for me. It was people doing it to spite you. And I am here for it. I support it. I love that move and I respect it.
Also, there is questions about whether or not you intimidated or bullied people into leaving reviews.
I truly would never, ever bully or intimidate anyone. Right, Brady? Right?
I honestly just love the visual.
Right?
I love the visual of Stacey just camping out, waiting for random people to walk out of the grocery store and being like, hey!
Hey, you got a phone?
But would Stacey actually come across as threatening?
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm a very nice
lady. I'll tell you right now, Brady, you would be surprised. You'd be surprised what Stacey can do.
I won't be in the office that day.
Yeah.
I began the show with bad news bears. However, you are very excited about something, Jake.
I'm very excited about one thing and one thing only. And I am putting all of my energy into this right now.
Because it is
the one thing that has not let me down up to this point.
Okay.
And that is Julio Rodriguez and the incredible adjustments and start that he has been able to have thus far in his big league career. I mean, in the last 28 days, after he experienced just absolutely getting jobbed with strike three calls, last 28 days, he is hitting 330 average, .381 on base percentage, with a .485 slugging percentage and an OPS of .866. His WRC plus for 2022 is up to .114. League average is 100, and Julio currently is worth a 0.9 Fangraphs WAR through 39 games, meaning that he is on pace currently for nearly a 4-win season. And to put that into context, Ty France had a pretty good year last year, right? We would all say that. Would you say that? He had a good year?
I would say Ty France.
Ty France.
Ty France, he can hit.
Ty France's WAR was 3.1.
Pathetic.
So you like that? You like them apples? I mean, for all of the things that we have talked about and feeling down about, the one thing that you cannot feel down about is Julio Rodriguez and him being the star and living up to the hype that everyone had for him up to this point. And the kid is just getting better and better and better. And man, it's a beautiful thing to watch.
From the 253, think of the national media explosion if Julio was doing exactly what he's doing and the Mariners were hot, which is a fair point to make, because while I think baseball is overall more regional than a national pastime, the same way football is.
Hold on.
There are still, wait, listen, I think that the Mariners underperforming to our own expectations and their own expectations.
Yes.
Has overshadowed some really cool moments from Julio.
Yes. The 253, you're right, but I don't want to hear it right now. Don't talk about what the rest of the team is doing.
You guys were supposed to
I don't want to hear that.
Break from
we are
things.
Zeroed in
so
and
sorry.
Focused
so
on
sorry.
Julio
so
Rodriguez right now.
Look, I know.
I don't want to hear about everyone else.
One
Can
job.
We just enjoy the success of Julio Rodriguez?
So
just
sorry.
That alone. Okay? Mariners fans, stop thinking about everything else. Just focus in on Julio for a second and live in the peace and happiness you're one of your the best prospect that you've had in quite some time is coming through right now, and it looks like he has every chance to be the rookie of the year and every chance to be the superstar that, you know, everyone in baseball had been talking about that Julio can be. And also surprising people, this is the best part, surprising people with not what he's doing at the plate, but the defense that he has been able to provide at center field, that has been also a very welcomed, you know, surprise and addition to this team. And now you're not sitting here wondering what they're going to do at center field. Right now, Julio Rodriguez is playing really good center field for you right out of the gate. And that is something that we all had question marks about. And gosh, this kid is just so much fun. The joy that he brings, his ability to hit the ball hard, his ability to run and steal bases and all of it. I mean, it's just, it has been an absolute pleasure.
Brady, I got to have you find, while I'm saying this, find some kind of Julio highlight, anyone you want. Let's go ahead and inject it into our day and then try to get something here. Brady, take it away.
The look in and the 2-1 pitch. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field, heading to the monster, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. Julio Rodriguez with his third home run of the season over the monster in left down the line. Mariners have run number six on the night, home run number three for the kid, Julio Rodriguez. And that ball got out of here in a hurry. Way to go, kid. Number three in the big leagues.
Jake, I can be positive. I can do this.
It's
I can
good.
No, listen. Julio Rodriguez, not in fourth place in the AL West. On a team that is, but Julio is not. And Jake, I did that. Do you see how I separated the two things? I separated the two things.
You're still talking about it.
No, I'm not. I'm being positive. I am being positive.
You're having a hard time doing this.
Julio's
this
slugging
is not
percentage
easy for you. Okay.
Higher or lower than the Mariners winning percentage?
Let me ask you this. What was your reaction to seeing Julio's home run last night? Down bad. They scored 12 runs. The game is over.
I
it's
have been
the ninth
more excited
inning.
About other home runs.
You have been more excited about
the
home run?
It is harder to enjoy a home run in a moment when you know the game is gone.
Okay, Brady, what was your reaction to that home run in the ninth?
Keep on it with the kid.
Yeah.
Getting a couple. He had one home run in Miami, didn't have much after that for about a series and a little bit, but now that he's getting two home runs within like 1 week, just got to build on that.
Brady's
and make
a
it,
child. He hasn't accrued the bitterness. He hasn't accrued the bitterness and sadness that I have in
I've
my
been a Mariners
years.
Fan since day one. I've suffered the 20 years with you.
With a tear in my eye as I watch that, a single tear just down my eyes looking at this game, I see Julio Rodriguez hit that home run, And I stand up and I clap and I'm like, you know what? At least we've got Julio. Julio right now, seeing that, and that's a bad depiction of what's going on with this team. There's guys that are performing well and doing good things. But to me, giving me life, Julio Rodriguez and his success is giving me life. And I honestly, I cannot wait to watch this kid through the entire summer and see what he is able to do, because obviously he shows off the ability to hit the ball hard. He shows off the ability to have home run potential. I cannot wait to see Julio be able to square up the ball a little bit more consistently and be able to drive home runs, because I do believe that there's going to be a stretch where this kid just goes off for an insane, you know, run here when it comes to RBIs and home runs. And that's going to be really fun to watch.
Let's make a gentleman's wager. I want to be able to give you more of a rooting interest in this game and make you excited. I'm assuming Julio is going to be in the lineup. Obviously, it's not out yet, but I'm just going to assume there's no rest day and he's back out there. So, will Julio hit the first home run of the game?
Will he hit the first home run of the game? I will say yes.
Julio will hit the first home run of the game.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Okay.
See, here's the problem is Stacey's trying to make a wager on the fly, and we've had this rule. It's a 24-hour rule, Stacey.
I can think of it. I can think
How
of
about
it.
You just give
no,
yourself a
I
couple
it,
segments
it,
and we can
it.
Come back to
okay,
it. Because
I will think of the terms.
You cannot,
I will think of the terms.
We've already
I've
talked about this.
Handled.
You cannot do a wager on the fly. You're not good at
I
it.
I can.
And I don't know why you continue to keep trying to do it. Okay. We got to roll.
Now I'm stumped. Okay. We have some really fun guests lined up for the next hour here. We're going to run you through them. We've got Mariners reliever Penn Murphy joining us next. Michael Bump is going to be on with us. Tim Kirkjian. It's going to be a great time. Don't go anywhere.